The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
I'm Anna.
And who's the funky looking donkey over there?
That's Sven.
Uh-huh. And who's the reindeer?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't trust your judgment.
Excuse me?
Who marries a man she just met?
It's true love!
Whoa! Whoa.
Anna, I belong here. Alone. Where I can be who I am without hurting anybody.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I'm Aislinn Addington.
And I'm Tobin Addington.
And today we have a very special guest who's in studio with us today. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Josh. I belong to Aislinn. And let's be honest, all the guests are special, right? They're all pretty great.
It's true. My partner Josh is here today.
Yay, Josh.
Yay, Josh. Josh is here specifically to talk about Frozen, which is good because that's what we're talking about.
Yep.
But was plucked for this episode because he is an animation aficionado.
Yes. And an artist. I mean, an artist, an animator, an animation aficionado. He's I'm very excited to hear his take here.
Fanboy.
Fanboy, I think, is primary among them. I think you buried the lead.
Tobin. Oh, I stepped on you there. You were going to introduce the movie.
Yes. So we're talking about Frozen, as you said, from 2013. If you haven't heard of it, it's a animated Disney film from 2013 that is probably one of the most inescapable movies on the planet, I would say.
So while inescapable, I think, is a great word to describe it, I did not actually see this film in the theaters.
Neither did I, actually.
I know. Because the first time that either of us saw it was on the couch at my parents' home.
Oh.
I thought I had seen it once before.
Okay.
Maybe he didn't tell you.
Maybe he didn't tell me. My understanding...
Well, I brought my copy of the DVD.
No, we rented it.
Did we?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. This is why you don't have couples on.
This is amazing. This is such good radio.
But here's what it is.
Go
here's
ahead.
What it is.
Yep.
When we went to Need for Speed in the theater.
Yeah.
Frozen was still in the theater.
That's right. And we chose
to choose. That's a longer story we don't need to get into. Tweet me if you want to hear it. So I believe it was like Redbox only. I don't think it was out when we watched it. I don't think it was.
It was a movie I remember buying blind without having seen it.
Okay. Well, in that case.
Which was rare for me.
Josh is right. He brought his copy. I was right. He hadn't yet seen it unless he lied to me until this moment.
We'll go with we both saw it at the same time.
I like that.
Yeah.
And then we have continued to watch it from time to time, but I don't think it's been on in our house as much as it's been on in yours, Tobin. Tobin, could you share with us your history with this movie?
I can, yes. So this movie was made by a friend of mine. It was written and co-directed by Jennifer Lee, who we've talked about before. She wrote A Wrinkle in Time, an earlier episode of ours. And so I knew, I knew as the movie was coming out, I knew this was, so I saw the movie early, but only once, and not early like before it came out, but I mean I saw it before you all saw it, I think. And then my daughter fell in absolute love, as many people do, with this movie, with Elsa in particular. And this movie has played more in our house than maybe anything else, except unless you count Star Wars, all is one thing, because my son is into Star Wars. So yes, we watch Frozen a lot in our house, and we have a lot of Elsa costumes in our house. A lot of Elsa everything in our house, to be fair.
Which has always been fine with me, in honor of your child. Last night, when we were watching this, I pointed out, as she would have, everyone's favorite song.
Right.
So Trixie's favorite song. Yep.
Nice.
Song, Aislinn's favorite song.
Yep.
Just to make sure that we all knew what was going on. So always on my mind.
Did you point out my favorite character? She loves to point out my favorite character.
Is it Weaselton?
No, it's Sven, the reindeer.
Oh, of course. Yes. We talked about Sven. Tobin, you've shared a little history in that you and Jennifer Lee went to school together, but may I have a couple more fun facts about Frozen?
Yes. And then obviously, Josh, jump in as you probably know more about this history than I do. The first bit is that Disney had been trying to crack this story way back from 1943. Is the first recorded date that I could find that they were trying to make Hans Christian Andersen's The Snow Queen. Is it the Ice Queen or the Snow Queen? Snow Queen, right? Snow Queen. Yep. They're trying to make the Snow Queen into a film, and they sort of off and on, you know, through the Eisner years, they were close to making it at one point. They had a real hard time cracking the story. So it's a sort of property that has been in development for a long, long time. The other bit is that Jen was taking on the job of trying to write the movie, she was added as a co-director later in the process. She was the writer of the film, and they were working on the movie and they had a script they were happy with and they were moving forward, but Elsa was pretty villainous in it. And in Jen's telling of it, the composers, Kristen Anderson Lopez and Bobby Lopez, wrote, like, they sent them a demo of Let It Go, and Jen's response was, we now have to rewrite this script because it broke open the Elsa character. It, like, gave her a reason. And there was so much more empathy to that character, which I think is one of the things that, you know, that change makes this movie in a lot of ways.
Oh, totally.
And I think that, so anyway, that's the history that was, they were on the right track finally with Jen. And then the song came along and Jen had the foresight to say, okay, this needs to be, we need to sort of rethink some of this stuff to make this the Elsa of the movie.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Aislinn, can you tell us who the ladies in charge were on this film? Women involved in major roles in Frozen.
Absolutely. Writer-director, Jennifer Lee. Actors, Kristen Bell and Idina Menzel. Associate producer, Amy Scribner. Love it. Yeah. I love all those ladies. I don't know. I don't know Amy as well as the rest, but I mean, as a Rent fan from the mid-90s.
Yeah. And no, that's for you. And you love one of the actors from Rent. The other
Well, I didn't know if you were going from Rent to Wicked to Frozen. Could go Idina Menzel, Rent, and then Kristen Bell. I am Veronica Mars forever.
Yes, you are.
I was a swift adopter of the Kickstarter. I still wear my Kickstarter t-shirt.
Amazing.
It is a tribe. I'm so grateful to, grateful is not the right word. I'm so proud to be part of. I occasionally see people in their t-shirts as well in the world. And, you know, we're marshmallows. But in any case, Tobin, would you give us a brief plot summary, please?
Yes.
That anyone in the world has not seen that movie.
At her coronation, Elsa of Arendelle accidentally unleashes the icy powers she's been trying to keep hidden since childhood, plunging her kingdom into an eternal winter. Her fearlessly optimistic younger sister, Anna, sets out to bring her back and set the world right. Along the way, she teams up with a mountain man, his loyal reindeer, and a snowman who dreams of summer. When Elsa's powers once again turn on Anna, the movie becomes a race to save Anna's life through an act of true love. But rather than the traditional kiss from a handsome prince, that act turns out to be the selfless sacrifice of one sister for the other.
Goosebumps.
Nice.
Goosebumps. I love it. Hey, Tobin, tip off our discussion of the film, could we hear from another expert? Could we hear from Frozen's biggest fan?
Yes, we'll go to the main demographic for this movie. A 4.5-year-old child and who's loved this movie for years. And so let's hear what she has to say.
Do you like the movie Frozen?
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
That Elsa uses her powers.
What kind of powers does she have?
Frozen. And I like her sparkly dress.
Do you like Anna too?
Mm-hmm. No.
Just Elsa.
Just Elsa. Mm. That's all.
So, short attention span, but that's short, what we got.
Short and sweet. The dress is a big component. Yep. Also, mm-hmm. I pointed out the hair.
Yes.
The hair flip mm-hmm. Let It Go is something I've seen her do. She's got that move down and the taking off of the gloves. So let's get into it. It opens with the Icemen.
Which is a scene that I had completely forgotten about. but if you think about it, like each Disney fairy tale princess movie typically has some sort of either storybook ending, as is in the case with like the first three Disney princess movies, Snow White, Cinderella, and Sleeping Beauty. Mm-hmm. Later, they kind of tweak that a little bit in various ways. Like you get the stained glass in Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, right, right.
Or sometimes they'll open up with a song, like in The Little Mermaid, another really forgettable song that unless you watch the movie a lot, like you're not going to really remember. But it's a good way to like introduce the theme of the story and introduce basically what the movie is going to be about and kind of the same kind of like fairy tale kind of opening. They just kind of, again, update it and tweak it a little bit.
And Sven and Kristoff are there from the beginning.
Right. So it's the first scene of the movie that doesn't introduce the protagonist, which I think is interesting. They introduce kind of a side character, I guess kind of a love interesty kind of character. And the animal sidekick, which again is not given to the princess character, which it has been traditionally. As kind of like shorthand. It's like, how do you not like a person who's so beloved by a furry, cuddly squirrel? they don't have to spend a lot of time on character development. They just have to give him an animal sidekick in order to kind of fall for the character, you know?
Right, right.
And they purposely don't do that with the princesses. They actually give them more screen time and actually give them more character.
More development. Stuff to do. Yeah.
I feel like Anna is her own quirky sidekick.
Oh,
in a way.
Well, and I mean, we'll get more into how like delightful and charming she is.
She's delightful.
Yeah.
Anna, the character of Anna, because we meet them when they're children, and one of her first lines is, "The sky is awake, so I am awake." And that also reminded me of your child.
Yes, my daughter is an early riser to this day.
We also see, so we meet Anna and Elsa, and they have a early morning adventure with Elsa's powers, which leads to Anna getting hit for the first time. Mm-hmm. And then that goes immediately to the trolls, and the trolls are what I tend to forget.
And then
I remember and I love them, and I don't know if they fit, but I love them.
Right. So I think due to kind of the tumultuous production history of the movie and the various variations of the script, I think, you know, there are some kind of odd tonal shifts in the movie. And I think the trolls are kind of one example of that. And so I completely understand that reaction to it.
I also, as much as I love the trolls and I love the troll song, I feel like it's, you know, Grandpappy Troll really sets us on this course. If he had described the powers and what the consequences of them could be in a different way, if he had said, she needs to cultivate this power, or you know, in a more Star Wars has come up several times, in a more Star Wars Forcian way, then she needs to control them and don't be afraid. I mean, it's that, you know, don't think of a white bear, and all you think of is white bear. So, like, don't be afraid. Being afraid makes it worse. Like, I think she was set up to be doomed in a little bit that way, and so I get made fun of for this, but I often think of the way to solve the problem so the movie wouldn't exist.
Right.
And so I think Grandpappy Troll could have taken Elsa under his wing a little bit and better Yoda'd her.
So
that her parents and herself didn't feel the pressure, and that it was all, so that she wasn't alone, and then and then further needing to isolate. Like, that just, you know, of course it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
Better mentorship would save this whole thing here.
I think so. And again,
but then
I mean,
there wouldn't be the conflict.
Then there
I understand. Like, from a storytelling perspective.
But I'm going to go back to the sort of, it's not a quote, it's a rephrasing of the Jules Davis, who is known as the kitchen healer, who I didn't mention her. I apologize, Jules. But I mentioned the quote that if women knew the wisdom of their bodies, we wouldn't be in this situation. Mm-hmm. And so I thought of that again.
Right.
So like, really, if she had been, you know, asked to cultivate or asked to.
And properly informed too, given sort of the agency over her own body.
Bodily education. Back to that. Healthy sexuality is violence prevention, folks. I'm glad that we got to this place.
A level we've never been able to appreciate this movie at. And,
it's hard to find a level at which she's not able to. Hasn't even appreciated.
A Disney movie? Yeah.
And then we immediately go to the classic Disney plot device of
the dead parent.
Orphanhood.
So, the first time seeing this, I'm really excited. It's like, wait, we're getting a Disney princess movie where both parents are alive and we get to see them?
Nice try.
This is a little silly. I would like to just swing back a little bit and just dig a little bit further into something that Aislinn alluded to a bit earlier, and about how basically the lack of mentorship like results in a bunch of fear, right? And the main dynamic in most of the Disney princess fairy tale movies up to this point has been like a very black and white good versus evil kind of, you know, really easy themes. And this one, it does a little something a little bit different, and that it's love versus fear.
Ooh.
And that's really the scene that kind of sets up that theme throughout the movie.
I like that. Love versus fear.
That comes from Jennifer Lee. I wish I could claim to have just been able to like glean that from my experience watching the movie, but no, that's a really clever writer director at work.
Nice. So we've got the fear on the one side, and then that leads to a lot of loneliness for poor Anna, before and after her parents. You know, she's lonely, but I love that she's hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And I do love her, you know, naive whimsy. Yeah. And it's very Kristen Bell to me. I think Kristen Bell, as in a number of roles and times, has been able to play naive but not dumb.
Mm-hmm. Which is a thing we've talked about on this show before. I think back to the Wonder Woman episode. We are hopefully past the age of sort of ditzy naive and into sort of smart naive, like characters who can be, you know, full characters, but just not know things. And that's
being naive doesn't make you stupid. It makes you innocent and therefore endearing. It's more of a charming kind of thing
not yet fully informed.
Yeah. Right. Right, uninformed.
Absolutely.
I have in my notes that the situation turns the whole movie into Anna's quest and Elsa's journey.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I had a question. This brings up a question that you may have the answer to with that. So I'm going to ask the question now, if that's all right. Whose movie is this? Like. Yeah, whose movie is this? Is this Anna's movie or Elsa's movie? I think it's Sven's movie, but that's
Oh, man. Speaking of Sven, I mean, the animators were so clever in that they basically took the behavioral cues of a dog and animated him like a dog. And
how
fun that is to watch and how like entertaining he is. This is a character with no dialogue. He doesn't have any kind of consequential plot, you know, service to do. You know, you take Sven out of the movie and the events of the movie pretty much unfold exactly the way that they do with him in the movie. Unlike, you know, like a Cinderella where the little mice actually
affect the plot.
Got it. But that being said, like, he's still such a presence in the movie, and it's, I think it's just due to the really smart animators who made a really clear choice. and it, I think it totally works.
As soon as you say that, I totally see what they've done. That's so smart. Aizen, I think that the way that you said that, where Anna has the quest and Elsa has the journey. Is that how you said that?
Yes.
Yes. But
oh, Toots.
Can you hear Toots, Toe?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
So Toots has got a squeaky chicken.
He loves to be part of the conversation.
Yes, he's part of the conversation. I love it. I love it.
So Anna has a very specific task. Mm-hmm.
Right. Right.
Find her to get Winter stopped to that. So I thought that was more questy. Mm-hmm. And along mm-hmm. that, she needs help and she needs to learn and she needs, she learns things along the way. But then Anna's is more of a self-discovery.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've all heard it too many times, but Let It Go is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, in another movie or another iteration, Elsa would be a villain like she was, right. Early on in the piece. But like you said, the empathy that's built in and she's sort of doing the best she can. And from her perspective, having been told that she needs to isolate and she needs to control this thing,
mm-hmm.
running away to the furthest corner is the best thing she can do. And
makes
that's where
her,
she can be herself. And so I get it. It doesn't sound too terrible.
No, that's such a smart way to think of it, that hers is internal, like her journey is internal, and that's then gets externalized with the power, which is kind of cool, but it has to do with sort of an internal journey. That Let It Go, I have to say. So I've not only have I seen this movie a lot, but I've listened to that song a lot. I mean, there was a time when driving in the car, we moved back from New York when my daughter was very young, and she would cry all the time in the car because she wasn't used to being in a car. Subway, sure. She'd be just fine. Put her in a car, and she's scream her head off after about 5 minutes. And pretty soon, one of the things that would sort of, when she was a little bit older, the thing that sort of they loved to do in the car was listen to Frozen. So we would listen to this song on repeat back and forth to daycare every day and anytime we were driving anywhere. And even to this day, where sometimes she still requests it and we'll put it on, I will the big hook of that song when it comes will get me still. Uh-huh. I mean, it retains a power that for me anyway, even after all these times listening to it, there's something to that song of unleashing yourself that is just so powerful that I'm glad is in her life, is in my daughter's life.
I want to skip back to the song before that.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
because we got coronation, we got the big party, we've got falling in love. And so that's, to me, the song Love is an Open Door had a really poignant title.
Mm-hmm.
Because she, Anna, just is isolated by circumstance, not by choice. I mean, although I would say Elsa's not by choice either, but you know what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Like she's, mm-hmm. been so left and so is so excited that like the doors are opening and just wants sure. something and wants
a human
love.
Connection.
That's- yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that is, I kind of, it's literal a little bit for her that,
which kind of ties into
an open door.
The other huge song that this movie unleashed upon the world, and Do You Want to Build a Snowman?
Oh yes,
and which is the first I want song really of the movie.
Super quick before we go back to that, for Hans though,
uh-huh.
Love is an Open Door is an opportunistic thing, right? We find out later because he's
right.
the 13th son of this kingdom. He's never going to get any power. So for him, the open door is opportunism to take advantage of this naive creature. And so when I saw it this time, I was like, oh, clever, clever.
Yeah, that's smart. They're smart.
This is kind of my problem with Hans in the movie. In that, so the turn at the end that leads into the third act, right, where Hans is revealed to be the bad guy, which is also interesting for a princess movie because usually the bad guy is really apparent really early on in the movie. It's like, oh, is Olaf the bad guy? I'm really unsure, that the song is so sweet. And up until now, I hadn't really considered the fact that he considers an open door to mean something completely different from Anna. And I think the audience, you know, when they're listening to that song and viewing that experience the first time, A, they're getting to see a prince and a princess actually fall in love instead of just, okay, they're supposed to fall in love because they're a prince and a princess, which is Disney sometimes takes for granted in some of their past Disney princess movies. It's kind of nice that you actually get to see that process. But I feel that, like, other than that really subtle clue that you picked up after having seen it several times.
Right. Oh, yeah. It was only because I knew where he was going to be.
I feel that, like, that turn is kind of unearned and that you didn't really give a whole lot of clues to the audience. It's like a murder mystery in which they reveal the twist at the end. They explain it like the Sherlock Holmes ending. And you feel cheated because you're like, oh, okay, not that I was going to notice any of those clues, but at least they were there. And had I been attentive and clever enough, I could have picked up on that and pieced it together myself. I don't feel like you get that with Hans.
Interesting.
And one other thing I'd like to say about that, and that, you know, he doesn't get a villain song because obviously that would undermine the twist, but the villain never actively misleads the audience through song. Ever. They'll mislead the protagonist. Like Ursula will unfortunate soul to Ariel to try to get her to do what she wants, but like she's also giving a nudge to Flotsam and Jetsam over here. Yeah. It's like, okay, I got her now, boys. Mm-hmm. And so like the audience therefore is getting that nudge wink wink too. And the villain never actively tries to deceive the audience through song. Song is the most pure form of expression in most of these movies, and that they actually get to say exactly what they feel, which in screenwriting is typically not how you want to go, right? But it works in kind of this format.
Right, for sure, for sure.
And so, like, when you, as the audience, going through this movie the first time, and you're seeing this really sweet, charming kind of romance kind of blossom, and then, like, you get that turn later, I can understand how, like, the audience would feel cheated at that moment. And I certainly felt cheated. And I think that was one of the reasons, like when I first reacted to this movie after having seen it for the first time, I was a little underwhelmed. And that's not entirely the movie's fault because all the hype it generated, no movie can live up to that amount of hype.
Right.
Good as it may be. And Frozen is certainly a wonderful movie and I've come to appreciate it after several viewings, but I was very kind of down on the movie. And, you know, I found it charming and likable, but I, you know, movies like Tangled, which had come out just prior to that and played very much in the same kind of sandbox, but they didn't, they played more to the Disney tropes. They played more to what your expectations were going to be.
Right.
They're like, okay, we kind of say goodbye to the 2D animation. We're going now into 3D. So we're taking you to this new era, but look, there's all this familiar stuff, all the art direction cues from past Disney movies. And so like, it felt very familiar, even though it was, you know, it was a 3D movie and they were going in a new direction as a company. This movie, they don't really play to those tropes. They really try to really subtly undermine those tropes and subvert those tropes in really clever ways. And I didn't really appreciate that in the first time. I just wanted something familiar, like what I was used to.
Right, right.
Like, I know what a Disney princess movie. We all know what it is because Disney has spent decades making them.
Right. They're imprinted on our brain, yeah.
And exactly. Even if you've never seen one, although that's incredibly unlikely, it's so embedded in the pop culture that you know all the tropes by heart.
Right.
And other movies try to, you know, subvert those tropes. And I think much more like overt and like schlocky kind of ways. Movies like Shrek, not to be down on Shrek. I think Shrek is a fine film, but like it tries to do some of the same things. But obviously its tone is very different from Frozen. And I appreciate the more subtle approach that Frozen goes about subverting some of those princess genre tropes, which Disney itself has, you know, perpetuated, you know, throughout all these decades. So it's really clever for those reasons, I think.
So I think having not having the same level of appreciation as you do, Josh.
Sure.
And also,
I'm a nerd. I get it.
As a sociologist, I'm always looking to, you know, pull holes and ask, you know, the worst answer to a question for me is of like, why do we do that? Is, well, because that's what we've always done.
Totally.
So I think I was immediately refreshed on the first viewing of this, that for one thing, it's because of the way that they've empathized Elsa, you have, you know, two female protagonists or a protagonist and a something, but like you've got two female leads. in a similar way to how you have that in Wicked, which, and on my other podcast where we talk about Broadway musicals. Just kidding. If only I had the time.
I will not be a guest on that
Joey
one.
Joey podcast, put it in the lineup. You know, there are all kinds of critiques. Don't tell Uncle Mark. There's all kinds of critiques I have about Wicked. But what I so love is that there are two female leads who by the end get to follow their own paths and do what they need to and respect each other, even though they're very different. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I felt like it was about damn time.
Totally.
I've only watched Tangled once. When it becomes Keeler's favorite, I'll watch it more times.
Sure.
And I like, you know, I liked a lot of the things about it, but
Rapunzel's dress isn't nearly as pretty as Elsa's. I don't think it'll ever come to that.
But so I think I was less jostled by the shifts, and I was more just ready for that change in
sure.
in the mm-hmm. genre.
And I'm able to appreciate the movie for the way it changed things.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why I think I'm so high on the movie now,
mm-hmm.
after having seen it several times and being able to appreciate it for the way it does subvert kind of those expectations mm-hmm. and kind of those genre tropes. But my first viewing, I was expecting something, you know, kind of something familiar, something that, you know, yeah. I had seen time and time again,
because sure.
Disney had delivered the same thing more or less. They tweak it every now and then. Obviously, you know, they're updating various, they're tweaking the model, mm-hmm. but the model's pretty much tried and true, and they hew pretty closely to it.
Sure.
And this, I think, is one of the bigger divergences they make with the movie.
Hey,
that and Mulan, which is also really
let's
fun.
Yeah, we should talk about Mulan.
We'll get
all
there.
Good. Toby, you also have a boy child, who is a son.
I do.
Is he a fan of Frozen?
He is. He does not mind if Frozen comes on. It's not one that he picks. Mostly,
he's learned to live with it, like we all have.
What's his favorite character?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. He would probably say Kristoff is his favorite character.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that's who he would, you know, the kids often, they talk about who they want to be in the movie, you know, and he would say he wants to be Kristoff, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah, his taste has diverged along more or less traditional gender lines.
Sure.
You know,
I mean, Disney plays to those traditional gender lines too, so yeah. Let's call out Disney for
he lives in the culture and we yeah. are but it's a movie that he doesn't mind having on. He doesn't mind when the songs come on, although he does think when we're choosing songs in the car, because sometimes I let him choose back and forth, that he thinks Frozen's mm-hmm. way too long, or Let It Go's way too long. he's choosing much shorter songs, but anyway, he doesn't mind it. You know, the other interesting thing is that there are a number of adults in my life who had not seen it before my daughter watched it with them. There's a you know,
see, they're out there.
Yeah, there's some
not after your kid's been around.
Right, exactly. I mean, KP just needs to go out and preach the good word, right?
And they almost to a person, they come in with, you know, well, they all come in with expectations of, as you were saying, Josh, of what a Disney movie is, and then they will almost all be very pleasantly surprised as the movie goes along. And it turns out that it's not, in many ways, not the usual thing. It's not giving you right. some of the things that you come to expect. While at the same time, there's enough, you know, there's enough there.
Very much plays in the same
sandbox.
Yeah,
yeah. It's right. And so it's always been fun to watch my daughter show it to people who don't know it, and for them to have such positive reactions, because that's almost always what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You mentioned your son would, you know, probably pick Kristoff. I think it's a great character. Like, we've talked a lot about, mm-hmm. you know, Elsa and Anna, which are most important, but I think Kristoff has a lot to do. I love that he challenges Anna.
Sure. Yeah.
At various points, you can't marry a man you just met. And
I mean, that's a callback to a joke that Elsa originally gives.
Right.
But yeah. Which again, it's a fun, clever, like love at first sight doesn't exist, even though it mm-hmm. exists in all these other Disney princess movies. It's like, oh, that's a fun way to subvert that trope, you know?
Right, because at first, when it like when Love is an Open Door first happens, I'm like, oh, here we go again.
Uh-huh. Well, and the audience is on board because that they expect, okay, this is right. This is what happens in this kind of movie. Right. We get right. it. Okay.
Of course, this is what's going to happen now. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then when they pull the rug out from underneath that and they're like, oh, okay, we set up this trope just so we can knock it down. It's like, that's really satisfying when it happens.
Totally.
Anyway, I just like Kristoff. And I think
how do you dislike a character that Sven likes?
I'm just exactly yes. that you pointed out earlier. Of course, right. we're going to love him because Sven likes him.
If Sven likes him, he's got to be okay.
Yeah.
I mean, and the first line he says is, carrots. It's like he doesn't say, excuse me, or pardon me, you're in my, you know, can I get behind? No, he doesn't do like what a polite, like well-adjusted person
not
would
what
do.
A prince
right.
would do.
Right. He says something really rude. Now we know behind the gruff exterior he's okay because Sven likes him.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And there's also Olaf.
Yes, we should talk about and Olaf.
I understand that Olaf is supposed to be, well, I don't know if supposed to be, I understand that as an adult, I should probably find Olaf irritating on some level.
He's a little grating.
He's so funny. I'm sorry. I love him.
So I think what works about Olaf is, again, we're speaking to that naivety without being mm-hmm. ditzy. He's so pure and so innocent that, like, and we're shown that with his love of summer. Like, mm-hmm. he loves the idea, but he doesn't understand the consequences of summer, mm-hmm. what, you know, happens to ice in summer, and the funny line or... I'll be a happy snowman. Yeah. I mean, it's so cute and so innocent and so naive that, like, you can't help but fall in love with him a little bit, is as grating as he kind of is on occasion.
Mm-hmm. No, I love the just the straight, like, to camera. I don't have a skull.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or bones.
Or bones. And then the other one is when they're going off to see the trolls, that then he turns back to Anna and says, I like to think of myself as a love expert. Like, to me, that just sounds like something dumb I would say. Like, when I don't understand what's going mm-hmm. on and I just talk about it like I know. You know, like the
pipe. My favorite moment of his is when they're walking and he's, I'm sure she's just the loveliest, sweetest, most wonderful person. And he's like, oh, I've been impaled.
Yeah, see, some of it is delivery.
Yeah, so that we have a little descent. Olaf what? Sections are the sections of the movie when my daughter is watching it that I will get up and go do other things.
Yeah, I totally get that.
It does grate on me a little bit. Maybe partly because there's an element of I don't know. It's not quite baby talk, but there's a, mm-hmm. you know, it's
I get
a little,
that.
Maybe yeah, some yeah, of it's yeah. a little too cute by half. Mm-hmm. Again, yeah, I don't sure. think that's wrong for the movie. I'm just not the audience for that because, you know, and I also think what's very interesting that we haven't touched on yet is the way this movie was marketed, which if you recall, yes. the first trailers for the movie did not let you know it was a musical. And they
were dark,
and they lean.
This has so many songs in it.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. I remember a student of mine that I was teaching at the time came into class, and we were talking about what movies we'd seen that weekend. And said, "I went to Frozen." He said, "I didn't know it was going to be a musical." and they leaned heavily into Olaf in those first ads, and. Mm. And the adventure, and you know, they were sure. as I understand it,
this is
they
the had been, scope. It's epic. It's they, big. Right. Yeah.
They had been burned by Tangled.
It is all that,
and because boys didn't want to go see Tangled, and so they wanted to make sure that they had a movie that boys wanted to go see too. Yeah, exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I totally agree with you. And I think they knew that they with Tangled they had a good movie that they
it was
felt
a missed
like they,
opportunity. Right. They marketed differently and right. they tried to overcompensate for it this time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it was probably very smart. I think that even though this student of mine came back, this young man came back and said it was going to be a musical, but then he really enjoyed it. You know, yeah. like it wasn't like it was a musical and I didn't like it. It was
the songs
you know,
are great. Yeah.
yeah. Like they kind of but they did kind of they came into some criticism when the movie was out that they were marketing it. So that, sure. heavily that way at first until mm-hmm. of course, then it becomes a hit and the song becomes so huge and everybody kind of right. knows.
And regardless of what the marketing is, enough people saw it that word of mouth is like people know yeah. what they're in for.
Right.
You know,
exactly. Right.
My favorite trailer for Frozen, and I will put it on my Twitter because I'm trying to be back on Twitter, is the mashup where it is 50 Shades of Grey audio and Frozen video as a trailer.
Wow.
It is upsetting in the best way.
Oh my gosh.
And as we have discussed that at some point we're going to have to talk about 50 Shades.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Based on the premise of this podcast, I think I'll put it on Twitter, and then I'll put it on Twitter again when, or I'll point it out on Twitter. I'm certainly not the first one to do
it. I've had too many progressive movies.
Right. We need another exactly. We need one.
Twilight up to this point.
So yeah, it is a delightful mashup. But hearing a story about your student makes me wonder what the universe where I didn't know Let It Go until I watched the movie would look like. Like that must have been amazing.
Yeah.
Having not heard it a million times on the radio. I mean,
right. Yeah.
Because I heard right. that song was on the radio video, forever. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't come to it clean. Yeah.
You can't get away from it. Hey Tobin, speaking of music, do you know which song is my favorite in Frozen?
No, tell me.
Keeler does. It's the Fixer Upper song. It's the troll song.
Oh, with the troll song, of course. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a catchy song. I mean, they're all good songs.
But yeah. So that Keeler will point out as mine. And perhaps at first I just had to pick a favorite because I needed to answer that question for your child. But
well, and you weren't allowed to have something that anybody else liked as their favorite.
Sure. Yeah. You had some right of it. Anyway, I don't know if the trolls fit on, you know, entirely, but. Uh-huh. But I like them. They're
on their own. I think they're great. I think when you're taking in the whole of the movie, I think they're a little bit of a tonal shift, mm-hmm. and they're probably a remnant of an earlier draft.
Right.
They didn't want to get rid of it, and so they tried to make it suit, you know, the new version, and it does 90%. There's just that 10% that doesn't quite make
it. Yeah, because it wraps it up the way Kristoff was there the first time,
right.
although he seems to not remember the princesses, which is fine. A lot of people don't remember being young. I do, but a lot of people don't. and so then he is attempting to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
To bring her back to, you know, his people who have magic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's weird too, right? So he doesn't remember the princesses, mm-hmm. but he remembers that the trolls can help mm-hmm. because he's seen something like it before.
Yeah.
So it's
all a little cloudy.
I don't know if that's necessarily a plot hole or if there's actually like a in movie explanation for that we just missed.
Right. Well, it's sort of like, I mean, Tobin, I remember when we were kids, there was a chimney fire at our house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the details I remember of that are actual details of it or details
right.
that people told me.
Sure. Right.
I remember myself standing outside and firemen and all that, but mm-hmm. I don't think that aren't happened in the way I remember it.
Right. You know, Kristoff remembers that the trolls help someone. He doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily, you know, mean that those people are princesses and that these are the same people that he's.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Sure. Like, oh, I remember your hair.
Yeah. You
know. Mm-hmm.
Again. I would. what else do I mean? I feel like in this movie in particular, people know it so well. I don't know that we have to stick
really,
to plot.
Yeah,
too much.
We have been jumping all over.
Right.
So, let me say this because I haven't said enough already. I could probably shut up a little bit more. But let me say this because I find Anna an absolute delight in terms of a Disney princess, and she's so relatable as a person. Like she says, I don't know if I'm elated or gassy. And it's like, can you imagine Princess Aurora being gassy? Like,
right.
In the canon
right.
of that movie, does that really make sense? It's like, no, you know, the Disney princess has usually been a picture of like purity and perfection and other
right.
words that, you know, but we're given a princess that looks and behaves a lot more like people actually behave, not just women, but people, and like the insecurities that she has and she's able to voice. And it's like, you never get to really see in Cinderella, mm-hmm. Her insecurities really, you know, the Disney model has always been like, okay, they're kind, they're generous. We know that because animals like them. And they don't generally have like a huge arc in the movie. The princess at the end of the movie is usually the princess at the beginning, mm-hmm. except at the end, she's usually hitched. Right. But what happens or we feel like at the end, whatever they get, they deserve it because they've gone through so much. Basically, the model has always been, we're going to put this kind person through hell, and they're never going to like rise to the bait. They're going to, you know, Cinderella, she just kind of takes it. Mm-hmm. You know, she there's the deus ex machina of the fairy godmother. Same thing with Aladdin. Aladdin's just a gender bent princess movie. And fairy godmother is the genie, and you know,
gender bent princess movie is the name of my new band.
I would listen to that band.
Thank you. Sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, anyway, I just think Anna's given an arc. She actually has growth. You know, that's not always been the case in a lot of the Disney princess movies. Mm-hmm. They're usually, you know, we put them through hell. We like them because they're kind and they go through hell and whatever, you know, their happy ending is, they deserve it. And here we get something, you know, we get the happy ending, we get the love interest, we get the kiss. There's just enough that's familiar. Mm-hmm. You know, they play to enough tropes that it's still like we've been saying this whole time, it's still the Disney princess movie. They're still playing with the same toys in the same sandbox, but they do update it and tweak it in enough ways where it does feel really fresh and new. And Anna, I think, is really emblematic of that. Anna. Excuse me.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I don't think of this as a princess movie, and I recognize that they are princesses, but maybe that's why, because they feel so much more like characters than caricatures, you know, than perfect princesses. That there's
exactly
the princess.
Yeah, that there's something about the because they're given so much more. They're both given so much more to do that it feels. You know, if you tell me to list princess movies, I start with other ones you're talking about. I start with Cinderella. I start with Snow White. I start with Sleeping Beauty.
The ones that hew a little bit more closely to the tried and true model,
right? Like exactly. 100%. And so there's something they've really cracked something here. I think it's no surprise to me that this is what is as beloved as it is. Is it a much better movie than something like Tangled? I don't know that it is. I mean, I would probably say it is, but not by so much that it should be this much more successful financially, right? Like this movie is tapping into something very particular that I think people didn't know they were hungry for, in the same kind of way that, you know, that I was at Wonder Woman, where I didn't know that I was missing the thing that I was then getting, that I was so thirsty for that. So you say princess movie, and I intellectually recognize that this is one, but I don't sort of connect with it in this, with that label in the same way.
While we're talking about the ways that it is innovative, and otherwise different, let's talk about the end and the act of true love. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because that I love so much. Again, I mean, it's wickedy in that way. And also reminds me a bit of a term paper I wrote in college about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And
please do tell.
Thank you. I was waiting for the invitation. And how in the love relationships didn't save the day. In fact, they often made the day worse. And it was because of romantic relationships that shit went real bad. But it was a friendship, love, and a loyalty beyond romance that would save the day. And I have specific examples. We'll not get into them right now. but to me, I was surprised that's, you know, at the time it happened, first time I saw it, I was surprised, but then also it was something familiar. It felt like something that I knew, I know that is a deeper connection,
I mean,
depending on your romantic entanglement, but you know, that has potential to be a better solution. Mm-hmm. It's just so often not the solution that we find in a movie such as this.
Sure.
So for me, that worked real well. Did it work for y'all?
Yes.
Okay.
in a word, yes. Totally. And here's, I think, why it worked for me is because Disney has taught us, you know, what true love means in a Disney movie. And it's usually a symbolic gesture. It's usually love's true kiss. And they even say something to that effect. They play to
right.
that.
Well, the trolls suggest it. Like, right. oh, I bet this will help. Right. These yeah. trolls yeah. are not nearly as helpful
it
looking
turns
back
out.
Now.
These trolls are turns not, yeah, out, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe troll rules don't translate to human rules.
But so, I mean, they know that that expectation is out there, whether they have to suggest it or not. They do suggest it, mm-hmm. but they're just covering their bases, right? They're just playing it safe. They could probably take that line of dialogue out. And I think the reveal of what true love actually means in the context mm-hmm. of this story would be just as powerful because mm-hmm. they've already built that expectation. They've been doing it for decades over however many Disney princess movies. I should have counted them before coming on the podcast, but that's
did it work for you, Tope?
Yeah, this totally works. This is another part that gets me to this day. There's sort of two moments in this movie that I still get like a lump in my throat at. One of them is at that moment in the crescendo of the Let It Go song, the climax of that song, and this mm-hmm. moment at the end. This does not is not lost any of its power for me, and I feel like it's here's what I wonder. 30 years from now, someone watches Frozen for the first time. Does this moment, I'd be curious to how the moment strikes them, because I don't know how much of it for me is all of the Disney expectations that I have built up that you're talking about, Josh. How much of it is that being smashed with this new thing? And the fact that it's new to me is part of its power. And how much of it is the potency of the moment itself? And it would be interesting to someone who has seen, you know, 14 Disney movies post Frozen that sure. maybe begin mm-hmm. to play with this idea in other new ways too. Will it be as potent for them? I imagine it will be. I imagine it'll be close, but I wonder if it will be as.
I think it works on both levels, though, right? Because if you take away all the expectations that we have of Disney princess movies, although that's really hard to do given the company that's making this movie, right, and the way they launched their feature film canon. But if you try to just take away all of that and just accept the emotional story on its own terms, I think it's also just they do enough character building
right.
and they do right. enough hard work that it does pay off because it's just they're good storytellers.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you're right. I imagine that it has to do with the amount of time that we spend with these characters in the opening. We get time with them at the beginning, and then how much mm-hmm. we identify with them over the course of the things they're asked to do and the things that are done to them. And, you know, we see them grow and we see them change. We see them fight with themselves and with each other. And there's something supremely satisfying about this being the end of this movie. And then maybe it is just sort of extra sauce that it also happens to be sort of demolishing this previous cliche that we've,
exactly.
that we've become used to that is less, that feels then less true once we've seen this.
Right. Again, if the movie's main purpose is to just subvert Disney princess genre tropes, then we have another
it's
Shrek.
A different
movie. Right.
And again, there's nothing wrong with Shrek. It's trying to be something different.
And I would argue, in terms of like some of the gender stuff, it doesn't go that far to subvert.
But you're right. No, but I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. It's very Disneyfied, right?
Yeah.
They play it very safe.
It's a different podcast.
Let's give them credit where they deserve it, but let's also recognize that they could have gone farther with
right.
it.
Right. Sure. Right.
Certainly.
Right.
But this is a huge multinational conglomerate with, you know, a lot of interests at stakes, and they certainly want to appeal to the widest audience possible. They want to deliver this really positive, uplifting message, mm-hmm. and I think they do it, but they also want to, you know, get that message out to as many people as possible. And yeah, obviously, they did a good job because they made a crap load of money.
Well, and yeah, with any, you know, thing like this, there are different folks have different interests, right?
Totally.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
there right. are, I'm sure there are people within the corporation, you know, I know blasphemous in this house to say it, but that could give a shit whether they subvert gender role expectations or not, right?
Oh, totally.
But
they're just after the bucks.
It's a nice combination of folks.
Jeffrey Katzenberg in the 90s specifically said, "I'm not interested in the Academy Awards. I'm in the I'm interested in the box office awards.
Right.
I just want to make money." Now,
that paper.
Granted, that's the attitude that gave us like Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin and the Lion King, and so like
2 out of 3, I'm a fan.
And eventually Shrek.
And
he later, after
leaving Disney.
Yep. He started up DreamWorks Animation, right? Yep. And he tried to kind of follow the Disney formula the first couple of tries with Prince of Egypt.
Okay, I'm in the wrong podcast suddenly.
But yeah, anyway, yeah, we really got off the rails, right? But anyway, like, this is a company that is, we're kind of getting lost in this great uplifting message that it's delivering, and it should be applauded for that. But I mean, ultimately, the movie was meant to fulfill one purpose, and that's make money for the company. And at least it did that.
Always here to distill it down to the Eeyore of it all.
Well, the movie ultimately was able to do both, I think, is yeah. part
totally.
Of it.
It's a success on many, many levels.
Okay. As much as I love this movie, I am at a point where I would like to play a game.
Let's play a game.
Do you have anything else to
say? No, let's play a game. I love your games.
Okay. Gentlemen and gentlemen, this game is called Animate Me. Now, we are living in an era where a lot of it feels suddenly like everything is getting a live action treatment. The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Beauty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. Mulan. So I have some movie pairings here. We're going to do the opposite. I'm going to give you a movie pairing, and you have to tell me which one deserves an animation reboot and why. Now, yes. There are correct answers here. Points will be awarded. Now, I understand that with large franchises, mm-hmm. such as Star Wars, Avengers, other things, there are animated versions. But I'm talking about this particular film.
Mm-hmm.
Should it be animated versus the other one? Kind of, and why? Amazing. You know, where's the Olaf of it? Okay.
Okay.
So we'll do a couple pairings here. I sort of paired them by genre, if you will. So we'll start with 2015. We've got Star Wars The Force Awakens versus Avengers Age of Ultron. Which are you going to animate?
Oh, I got an answer. Do we both go, or is this?
You will each go, and I will determine the winner.
Okay. So I would suggest that we animate the Avengers movie, because I don't really want to touch the Force Awakens movie.
Interesting, Josh.
I feel the Force Awakens itself is a quasi remake already, and therefore a remake of a remake. We're really starting to, you know, we're getting to the clone of a clone and multiplicity.
We don't want number four.
Is that his name? The fourth clone.
I like pizza.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and.
That's for all of our publicity fans out there.
I've only seen the Avengers Age of Ultron movie the one time. Yeah, and I didn't really have a strong reaction to the movie.
So maybe it deserves
a remake. Maybe it deserves a remake. That maybe they could boot it up a little bit.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm going to award no points because you picked the same answer and I didn't feel a strong why from either of you.
We didn't have the same reason why, though. Okay.
True, but I didn't find either of them very compelling. Warranted a point.
Harsh but fair.
I know.
Harsh fair.
Also 2015, also franchisey,
mm-hmm.
would you animate Furious 7 or Spectre?
Interesting. Spectre, was that the James Bond film?
It was indeed.
Okay. And I have, so full disclosure, I've only seen the first Fast and the Furious movie.
Me too. No, that's not true. I've seen one other one, but yeah, okay. We're basically in the same boat.
We put it in here for our
Too Fast, Too
Forever.
Yes, our crossover fans.
Contest.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yep. It was a fun episode. We have very similar views on the movie. not to get into that. You already have a full episode about that one.
Go visit Too Fast, Too Forever, Lap 2, Episode 1. Want to find out what we think of Fast
That's
Spirit.
Exactly right. We'll call back.
So, Furious 7 versus Spectre, folks.
So, considering that I have no idea what one of the movies actually is, I guess I'll go with the movie that I know, which would be Spectre, which I saw the one time. It was a fine film. I'm not the biggest James Bond fan. He's another character that most of the time for most of the franchise doesn't have an arc. He's the same at the end as he is at the beginning. Now, with the Daniel Craig movies, they do try to, you know, change that a little bit.
Parkour makes everything better.
Parkour makes everything better. Parkour, parkour. Parkour, parkour. Spectre is my answer.
Spectre. Tobin, do you have an answer?
Yeah, so I'm going to say Furious 7 is the clear choice because it's basically a cartoon already.
Oh, yeah,
so
there you go.
Let's do a full animation. Also, I feel like Vin Diesel is, you know, he has done some nice voiceover animation work. The Iron Giant, mm-hmm. Groot, he has a voice for cartoons. So I think that we should animate Furious 7.
He's right.
Number one, I give out the person. No, but number two, I would say Furious 7 is correct. While cartoon Javier Bardem needs to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Spectre, and I haven't seen all the
but that
James
would be
Bond.
A No Country for Old Men animated.
That's true. I should have added that. That's the write-in candidate. It's because the secret feminist answer is that it's so egregious to me that in Spectre, a woman shares being a survivor of sex trafficking, and like the next scene, Bond surprises her in the shower. I just can't even with that. So Furious 7 is a clear winner. Okay, we're gonna switch the tone.
Okay.
Yes.
Deadpool versus Bad Moms. Which would you animate?
I have an answer for this.
No,
you,
go
Cope?
For it.
Bad Moms. We have a lot of animated superheroes. Deadpool is a very heightened character already. You mentioned that Furious 7 is basically a live action cartoon. I would argue that Deadpool is, you know, very much of the same kind of cloth, cut from the same cloth. Bad Moms, I feel, was a very delightful and pleasant movie. I feel that they could have pushed the moms to be badder than they were. And now we, you know, in an animated take, you can really push it, I think, a bit further.
Nice.
Oh, that's a great answer. Okay, just
that's
for the
really
sake of
answer.
Points, I'm going to have to go the other way. So I got to build a good case for Deadpool. So here's what I would do.
It's the big class. I love it.
Yes, exactly. So I think what we have to do absolutely is animate Deadpool. And here's why. Deadpool ushered in this wave, or what will maybe become a wave, of R-rated superhero movies. We go all mm-hmm. out with sure. the violence and the language and the off-color jokes. And I think that the untapped place of animation in a big budget scale, Sausage Party being the exception that proves the rule, is crude, violent, R-rated cartoons for adults, animated films for adults. So I'm going to say we animate Deadpool to really pull off what Deadpool, the thing that Deadpool began.
That's a compelling case.
It's a good case. I say point still goes to Josh, but that was a great case, Tobin. You
I
did
chose
it.
The Kristen Bell movie.
Yeah, that's your answer to it. It was Kristen Bell.
It was all strategy.
I have not seen either of those films.
Oh, okay. If you are interested in an R-rated comedy, it's not a film, but please check out Big Mouth on Netflix.
Yes.
It is so yes. funny and yes. so inappropriate. Yes.
The Hormone Monsters.
The Hormone Monsters are my favorite. Yeah. Okay. Two more. Okay. Next we have the next two are dedicated to Josh because he's sitting next to me. First we have classic horror, yes. The Shining versus The Exorcist.
Holy shit. I'm sorry.
Wow. Yeah, that's hard.
Which would you animate?
I have not sworn up to this point in the podcast.
It's
which I think is
that seal.
Pretty
we
good
gotta
because,
earn our E somehow here. So
I get pretty passionate about those Disney princess movies, but I also love
classic horror
films. And
I have an answer. While you
go ahead, go for it.
I have an answer. Yeah. I would animate The Shining for two reasons. One, because there is something so unnerving about the precision of the framing of that movie and the pace of that movie that I think would be even eerier, like rotoscope animated. Like you could do some really, really off kilter, like cool
Ralph Bakshi,
yeah,
Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Style,
imagine that version of The Shining. The other thing is that The Exorcist, since all of that stuff is so, the stuff done in that movie is so, it was done practically
so many of the special effects were just done on set with like shaking the bed and like spitting the pea soup. Like there's something, there's something really magical about all the horror in that movie actually happening in that room that I would hate to dilute with animation.
All right. So because you chose The Shining, and I don't have a strong opinion about either movie, I think I would very much like to see the animated adaptations of either one of them. I'm going to choose The Exorcist, and this is why. So as much of all those fun practical effects are, and that's really just a small portion of the movie. Most of the movie is really about, what's really scary about the movie is not what the demon is doing to Regan, the little girl who's possessed. It's what all the doctors
are true.
Doing.
God, you're right. That's true.
And priest,
And I think the way that they portray that in the movie is already perfect. But again, you could just heighten all of that to such a degree in animation because it's already a heightened version of reality anyway. And that would be a really fun dynamic to play with in animation.
Oh, that's hard. I think you both get a point, which keeps the tie, which means we have to do the tiebreaker. Yes. Are you ready? Ah,
boy, I don't know now. I did not think you could find a reason to do The Exorcist over The Shining, but if there is a way, you did it.
I was really reaching.
That's good.
Okay. This is a three-way versus. So even if someone picks one, you still have an option of two others. And it's contemporary horror. And it was hard because I do not see very many.
I was going to say,
and
you know three contemporary horror movies?
No, I don't. I've seen two out of three, but it's going to
work. Which is really impressive.
Which is, thank you. Thank you. Okay, so it is Get Out versus It Follows versus A Quiet Place. Which would you animate and why?
Hoping you've seen all three movies? Okay. Man. So I think I want to rule out A Quiet Place.
Okay.
In fact, my biggest complaint with A Quiet Place is we saw too much of the monsters.
Okay.
And I think what A Quiet Place worked best at was visual storytelling and heightening drama.
So you're going to keep that live action.
Let's leave that the way it is. So now I'm trying to narrow it down because again, this is
he's showing his work here. That's what he's doing.
Exactly.
He's verbal processing.
I wasn't very good at math because 236 would become 362 halfway through the math problem, but I could get partial credit if I showed my work. So
there you go.
It's that instinct.
I see.
And so we're down to It Follows versus Get Out. And Get Out is a movie from just the social impact it has and the social critique it has is extremely poignant. That being said, you take all that aside, and I think the storytelling in it is just so brilliant. It's great. And I enjoyed It Follows. What I enjoyed most about It Follows, though, not necessarily was the filmmaking or the storytelling itself, it was the ideas that it presented. Yeah. And
I don't know what you're animating.
So I think it would have to be It Follows.
Okay.
You can play with those same ideas, but maybe, again, push it a little bit further.
And I do love some good cartoon sex, so.
Right, yeah. Okay.
I'll leave that to you, dude. I'm going to vote for A Quiet Place. And here's why. I think you do this movie in a like a graphic novel style, like a not anime, but like edging toward anime style. I think that you correct some of these issues of not showing the creature as much. And since it is so, there's so much stillness, you could do so much with stillness. Having that animated, I think would be for sure the way to go. Cause you don't touch Get Out. That's where I would go. I would really love to see a sort of hardcore animation of A Quiet Place.
I think though, if you're going to take the trouble of animating it, like you got to animate this great, cool, badass monster, and
maybe after the credits.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
A little teaser. I mean, that's hard. I certainly don't want to choose between, you know, my boys here, but
but you live with one of them, so.
I do. I would love to see more, you know, inclusion, and part of that being sign language included in more animation.
Okay.
So for that, I'm gonna give Tobin the point. Also, I don't think Tobin's won a game.
Tobin, did you win a game?
I don't think I've ever won a game.
Holy cow.
Oh, wow. Thanks for Tobin. Thank you both for indulging me and playing. I appreciate
that
it.
That was a great game.
I feel that was indulging for everyone involved.
Excellent.
So now is the point in our podcast where we decide whether this movie is progressive or regressive. Is this a step forward or step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? Josh, what say you?
There's no way in hell this movie is regressive.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this is obviously a very progressive movie. It just has a very empowering message. I mean, what's not to like? It's just so positive and uplifting.
Excellent. Aislinn, how about you?
Agree. I think, especially now, better understanding from both of you all the history, the length of time it took to get this one right, that it was, you know, they did it right finally with or at least got it done. But I would say did it right with a woman at the helm is absolutely progressive. And then we'll go back to my previous statements about two female leads, which you just don't see that often without one of them being pure evil. And so I think that they can be very different women, but still women that folks can identify with and can look up to. I think fantastic.
Yeah. Tope? Well said. And two women as leads who are not fighting over a dude. The dude is not a prize. There's
yeah, it's right. Not a love that, triangle.
That really works.
And in they share a lot.
in fact, exactly. And the love story ends up being ancillary to the main story in the end anyway.
Right.
The story is about not romantic love. It's about sibling love and
the best of love.
Yeah. Unless you're getting into Game of Thrones territory.
Yeah.
But they're expanding the idea of what true love can be, because they've given us pretty much one version of that for 70, 80 years or whatever. Right. And now we're given sibling love. And then Moana, we get,
ancestral love,
more intergenerational. Yeah.
I mean,
love of community.
We have
it's community love.
You know,
community.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we get basically what's a buddy road trip movie in Moana. So they really again expand the idea of what love can really be and how that manifests, and it's really fun.
Aislinn, what are we watching next?
Well, next up, the tour of significant others continues. As we watch Haywire, our guest will be your wife.
My wife.
Libby. In 2 weeks. Your wife.
I'm already looking for
it. In 2 weeks. Look for it on October 2nd.
Awesome. That's going to be really fun. Can't wait. Awesome. Josh, thanks so much for joining us. Is there, do you want to?
If it hasn't been abundantly clear, it is absolutely my pleasure.
Do you want to be found online? And if so, where do people find you?
You don't need to find me online. That's okay.
Okay.
I'm just happy to be here and to talk with you fine people.
So if you want to get in touch with Josh and let him know what a wonderful guest he was, please get in touch with us. You can get in touch with me on Twitter at Tobin Addington.
You can get in touch with me at Sassy Nerd MT. And you can... Yep, okay. And you can find us at facebook.com/thecontenderspod or on Twitter at @contenders_pod. Come say hi. We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. And you can find them on Twitter at @cageclubpod.
If you like our show, or if you don't like our show, please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. They make us feel good, help us spread the word about the show, and let people know that they should be listening to The Contenders. We really appreciate you listening to us. I am Tobin Addington.
I'm Josh Devenair.
I'm Aislinn Addington, and we'll see you next time on The Contenders.
Well, let's see. I got to call up my thing here. Oh, yeah, you're starting this one. So what am I doing?
I know. I'm just waiting for the go.
I'm ready when you are.
Okay.